السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. This is A.B. Dawji, and this is The Big Picture. Well, it's wonderful to be back. Wonderful. Put your hands up, all those who missed me. Let me see now. One, two, three. Is that it, eh? Only three people. Hey, what's happening here? This is the famous Big Picture program. I thought millions were tuning in to hear exciting, dynamic international news analysis. And what's this here? Only three people? That's so disappointing, eh? Never mind, all you three people. This show is especially for you. Right. So as I said, it's great to be back home. I'll tell you more about my December tours. Four of them. About 80 or so went to Vietnam. Another 80 or so went to Spain and Morocco. 45 to India and Kashmir. And I went with 45 to Egypt, Jordan, Palestine and Lebanon. And all of us had an awesome time. Mind-blowing, majestic, highly educational, and of course great fun. But more about that later. And I just stepped off the plane and walked into a steaming hot Joburg. And lots of hot news also. A story that caught my eye was the one that said that Jacob Zuma will be singing for his supper. Well, actually, the news was that he will be making an album of songs. Well, that's wonderful, isn't it? Now that he is unemployed, he's got to do something. But wait, there's a catch to this. Who is going to pay for this recording session? And the answer is, we Durbanites. That definitely is striking a wrong chord. Zuma sings and Itekwini will have to pay? This is so outrageous, eh? How much is it going to cost? No one is saying. So why don't the Guptas pay for it, eh? They could just cover it, the whole cost, with their pocket money. This is a big story. Very big story. I actually read it on the British Guardian newspaper website, so it's international. So, what is he going to be singing about? Some reports say that it's going to be struggle songs, the ones that Umkhonto sang when they were fighting apartheid. But you know what? You know what? My spies tell me that Yakubai will actually be making a song about the time that he was president of South Africa. That's right. What was it? How long was he around? I think it's about 8 years or so. And in that time, he did whatever he wanted to. He did whatever he wanted to. Nobody could stand in his way. And if they did, out they went. So in short, he did it his way. And so, dear listeners, this is the song this is the song that Jacob Zuma will be recording. Remember, you heard it first on this radio station, exclusively. Ladies and gentlemen, Jacob Zuma sings My Way. And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friends, most of them are in Dubai. I'll say it clear. I'll state my case, of which I am certain, at the State Capture Commission. I've lived a life that's full. Yo, big house in Nkandla and five wives, or maybe six, I think seven. I've traveled each and every highway, all roads lead to sex and world, and more. much more than this. I did it my way. And if you don't like it for you, it's the highway. Regrets, I've had a few. Taking out Praveen and putting in David Van Rooyen, eish, not good. But then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, taking a shower afterwards, and saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, especially for Duduzani. Each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, whether it was a swimming pool or a fire pool, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall and did it my way. I've loved, I've laughed and cried. I've had my fill, my share of losing. Sure, judge said I have to pay my own legal fees. And now, as tears subside, I find it all so amusing. To think I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way, just like Malusi Gigaba. Oh no, oh no, not me, I did it my way. For what is a man? What has he got, if not himself, and also Ajay and Rajesh and Atul? Then he has not to say the things he truly feels. Machine worm, and not the words of one who kneels. The records show I took the blows when they shouted, pay back the money, pay back the money, and did it my way. Yes, it was my way. Well, there you are, folks. My Way by Jacob Zuma, with apologies to Old Blue Eyes. Should I keep my day job? Or will Itekwini Municipality give me a recording contract? Okay, let's now move over to more to my recent trip to the Middle East. One thing I can tell you, every trip that I make to that region is a new learning experience. I try to speak to as many people as possible. One clear message from all these countries is that people are really battling, really battling. Egypt was particularly bad. Speaking to an old guy selling souvenirs at the pyramids was quite depressing. He said, there is a slight improvement in tourism, but the people coming are not spending. They are from India and Malaysia and such places. They don't spend. Hardly any people from Europe or America. He said, brother, Achi, people come here on holiday with $1,000. What is $1,000? They pay for hotel and food. They don't buy from us. I go home with nothing, and my children wait for me to bring food. I have nothing. This is a bad life. I really felt sorry for him. In Lebanon, you find Syrian children, refugees, 7, 8, 9 years, 10 years old, along the main street, battling to sell the street that runs across, right across on the beachfront. These children come up to the cars, battling to sell small packets of tissues or flowers. Very, very sad indeed. So, as I said, there's much to learn. I asked this same fellow who was selling souvenirs, so what do you think of your president, Sisi? president of Egypt. And he answered, he is a very good man. He is working hard to improve our lives. And as I left him, I wondered how his life had improved if he's going home empty-handed. So, what about my group of 45, eh? Well, lots to talk about. I got a file on each one of them. Each one of them. But we had Maja up at a snow resort in the mountains of Lebanon. The snow was really deep and it was freezing cold. But we were all kitted out very well at a ski shop with heavy boots and snow suits and gloves and we raced around on snowmobiles. And the bullies chased the aunties with snowballs. One not-so-young lady with a walking stick got onto a snowmobile. Now, a snowmobile is like a very large motorbike with skis underneath instead of wheels. And she went whizzing up and down the mountains. At the end, she said, "Hey, I never thought in my whole life I would ever do such a thing." And guess what? Next day, she came to the dining room without the walking stick. Young again, eh? Young again. Right, now to some serious stuff. Now, I asked you once before, what do you get if you cross a gemsbok and a horse? Let me repeat that. What do you get if you cross a gemsbok with a horse? And the answer is, you get a hell of a gemors, eh? Okay, you need to know some Afrikaans to get that one. It means a hell of a mess. And that, dear listeners, is what the situation is in the Middle East, which I often describe as the muddled East. And that goes particularly for Syria. Don't try to make sense of what's happening there. And more importantly, please don't try to work out who are the good guys and who are the bad guys, the villains. I'm speaking about the leaders of these countries in the wider Middle East. Don't try to work out who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. Because all of them have their own personal agendas, self-interests, and therefore every one of them has dirty hands. Yes, their hands are dirty. You got it? You say, wow, this guy is clean, eh? He has the interests of the Muslim Ummah at heart. And that other guy is the villain. Next minute, your hero is shaking hands and having tea and naan katai with the villain. I've seen it happen over and over again. So don't get egg on your face by giving your strong support for any one of them. Clear? For any one of them. And so to Syria. Each one of the outside countries that are involved, interfering in that tragic country, want something for themselves. Each one. It's a battleground. People pulling in different directions and thereby pulling the country apart. Now, some time ago, the so-called West wanted to get Bashar Assad on their side. So on the 14th of July 2008, Assad was invited by French President Nicolas Sarkozy. Nicolas Sarkozy to Paris for the big celebration known as Bastille Day. Big military parades and all of that. Bastille Day. All the big shots were there. Hosni Mubarak of Egypt, Ehud Olmert, that's Israel's prime minister, and many others. Big shots. The idea was to get Syria under Western influence and out of Russian-Iranian influence. But unfortunately, a short while later, the wheels came off in Syria. the so-called Arab Spring hit Syria in 2011, and everything became totally unstable. What has been Russia's role? Russia has a military base in the town of Tartus. I've been there many times. It's huge. So, dear listeners, it's still the Cold War that is carrying on, as in the time of the Soviet Union, when the world was divided into two. Some countries were under Soviet influence and protection, and some were aligned to the United States. The tug of war has not ended. I think I spoke about all of this not very long ago. Ach, but no matter. It's nice to go over your sabak again and again, so it sticks in your head. Ne? Correct. So, Russia doesn't want to lose Syria. So, therefore, it supports Bashar al-Assad. Iran doesn't have too many friends in the West and has to keep what it has. Syria and Iran have always been close, so Iran doesn't want to lose Syria, and so it also supports Bashar al-Assad. Turkey blows hot and cold. 1 minute, Turkish President Erdogan is saying, "How's it?" to Donald Trump, and next minute, he is in Moscow shaking hands with Putin and Iran's leader, and this week, he told Iraq's new president, Barham Saleh, he said this to him: Turkey and Iraq will deepen their cooperation in the fight against terrorism. Dear listeners, you want to know what Khemors is? Well, I'll tell you. It's quite bizarre, in fact. Listen very carefully. There are Kurdish people who want to recreate their homeland. These people have their own distinct culture and language. The problem is that part of their original historic homeland has been divided up. Their homeland was divided up. Some of it lies in northern Syria, some of it in northern Iraq, and some of it in southern Turkey. So they want all these lands back again. They want to unite their land, Kurdistan, once again. And they've been fighting all these countries for a very long time, and they have been paying a very, very high price. When old man Bush, the war criminal who died recently, bombed Iraq in 1991, he got the United Nations to declare northern Iraq a no-fly zone, meaning Saddam Hussein, the president of Iraq, must not attacked the Kurds in northern Iraq. His planes couldn't fly there. And Western countries. So, basically, the north of Iraq, which was Kurdish dominated, was in effect autonomous from the rest of Iraq. Saddam Hussein couldn't go there. And Western countries sent their oil companies to this oil-rich Kurdish region to make maja. So the Kurds in northern Iraq prospered, and Saddam had to sit and watch as part of his country was not in his control. But the Turkish government always acted very strongly against the Kurds to ensure that they don't get too big for their boots and don't get carried away with their ideas to liberate any part of the land, either in Syria or Iraq or Turkey, to form Kurdistan. So Turkey has been clapping them. And when the revolution started in Syria, Turkey stepped in to repeatedly attack Kurdish militants there, calling them terrorists. Stay with me, okay? It's not so complicated. Ladies, don't go back into the kitchen, please. And gents, don't get into your cars or start washing your cars. Just stay with me. I know it's a bit heavy. Right, so it starts to get interesting. Or should I say, mind-blowing. So, who is the new president of Iraq? That Turkish president Erdogan was shaking hands with this week in Ankara. You forgot his name already? Hey, pay attention there at the back. I just told you his name. Barham Saleh. Barham's easy to remember. His name, B-A-R, Bar. And Bar is where you have a dop. And H-A-M, Barham, H-A-M. And both of them, of course, are haram. Easy way to remember. Bar and Ham, Barham. See how easy it is to remember? Learn your sabak properly, okay? So who is Barham Saleh, president of Iraq? Fasten your seatbelts, folks. He is a veteran Kurdish politician. His roots are in the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, known as PUK. Listen to this. The PUK is one of the main Iraqi Kurdish parties that has traditionally enjoyed close ties with the Kurdistan Workers' Party, known as PKK. The Kurdish rebels, whose insurgency inside Turkey is orchestrated from the headquarters in Quandil Mountains, separating Iran from Iraq, move freely in the PUK's Sulaymaniyah stronghold. Turning a deaf ear to Baghdad's howls of protest, Turkish Air Force jets continue to routinely pound PKK targets in Kandil, causing the death of multiple civilians over the years. So, folks, there you are. Iraq's new president is a Kurd, or Kurd, and his background is the Kurdish movements, which Turkey regards as terrorists. But hey, we are talking politics and power, and so these differences must be put aside for self-interest. And so, what is Turkey's interest? Let me read you a little bit more from this article. Turkey clearly sees benefit in looking beyond Saleh's political antecedents, that means his background, his track record, on a number of counts. Erdogan will almost certainly seek Saleh's support against the PKK. He is keenly interested in landing a chunk of Iraq's multi-billion dollar reconstruction pie. With Washington tightening the screws on Tehran, Turkey and Iraq have much to gain from cooperation, particularly as Iran will undoubtedly lean on Baghdad to help it bypass the sanctions. Iraq is sitting on the world's 10th biggest reserve of natural gas, and most of it is in the Kurdistan region. Turkey is a natural customer and transit hub for sales of the gas to gas-hungry Europe. Iraqi gas would reduce Turkey's dependency on imports from Iran and from Russia, its biggest supplier as well. Turkey's political influence in Baghdad has never been a match for Iran's. Right? Turkey's political influence in Baghdad has never been a match for Iran's influence. And what little it had has been rapidly waning together with the fortunes of its Sunni Arab proteges. Saleh could be a helpful ally in helping restore links between Turkey and Iraq's fractured political establishment. And Turkish President Erdogan said to the Kurdish president of Iraq, Saleh, a day before yesterday, Turkey and Iraq will deepen cooperation in the fight against terrorism. And who are the terrorists, according to Turkey? The Kurds, the militant Kurds. You know what? You really can't make up this stuff. As I always say, real life is often stranger than fiction. So where does the United States feature in all of this? Well, U.S. troops are in northern Syria helping the Kurdish militant group known as the YPG. the YPG actually controls almost one third of Syria. Let me repeat that. The United States is helping the YPG. They've got troops there in the northern part of Syria. They've got tanks. They've got everything there. And the YPG actually controls almost one third of Syria, the area known as Rojava, which the Kurds believe is their land, part of Kurdistan, the original Kurdistan. Things are looking very, very grim at the moment for the Kurds. Very serious, in fact. Our man in the White House, Bagla himself, Donald, has got enough problems at home to deal with. What with the government shutdown and 8,000 government workers facing no work, no pay. When he was on the election campaign in 2016. And of course, he's got the big problem now because the House of Representatives is now controlled by the Democrats. The Democrats, and they're going to make it very hot for him. He hasn't got carte blanche anymore to do whatever he wants. They're going to be breathing down his neck. So that's another big problem he's got. Now, anyway, when he was on the election campaign in 2016, he promised to bring American troops home, back home from overseas. And he said it's costing too much to keep them there to protect countries that don't really appreciate what America is doing and don't give America anything in return. So why keep the troops there at high expense? So on New Year's Day, he said, I'm pulling out our troops out of Syria. What has Syria got? Nothing. No vast wealth. Only sand and death. These are his words. Only sand and death. That's what Syria's got. You see? He says it's a waste of time. Nothing there at all. His other friends, Saudi Arabia, has sand. lots of it, in fact. But it's got lots of oil also. And they use their money selling oil and they buy U.S. weapons. So it's worth keeping huge American bases and troops in Saudi Arabia. Makes sense, doesn't it? And of course, he phoned 2 days ago. He phoned Turkish President Erdogan and he told him nicely, because he knows there is rumbling back home about pulling out the troops from Syria. So he told Erdogan, he said, listen, Mamu, when you invade, when after we leave and when you invade northern Syria, take it easy, okay? Don't overdo it. Don't create a big humanitarian crisis and everybody will start blaming me and say, see what you did? You pulled out our troops and now there's a whole lot of massacres and all that. So you know what, Mamu, take it easy, right? You can invade, but control yourself. But pulling out of Syria got alarm bells ringing. Ringing. Ding, 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 ding. Where? In Tel Aviv. Israel is shocked by this announcement. And also shocked by what Bagla said. He said, these are his actual words, Iran can do whatever they want to in Syria. Iran can do whatever they want to in Syria. These are his words. So the alarm bells are ringing in Israel. Why? Because Israel wants U.S. troops to stay in Syria to ensure that Iran doesn't extend its influence in Syria. We all know that Israel's main enemy is Iran. Sanctions on Iran are pushed by Israel via its friends in Washington. Sanctions. The currency is so badly damaged. I was there in September. Wow. Currency is falling like mad. The nuclear deal that Obama made with Iran was cancelled by Donald Trump through pressure from Israel's friends in Washington. So Israel wants U.S. troops to stay in Syria. But here's something else I told you before. Israel has always been happy with Asad. He's a good boy. And this was confirmed once again this week. Here's a report from the Haaretz newspaper. That's the Israeli newspaper. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Thursday that Israel does not object to Syrian President Bashar Assad re-exerting control over the country and stabilizing his regime's power. Let me repeat that. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Thursday that Israel does not object to Syrian President Bashar Assad re-exerting control over the country and stabilizing his regime's power. Netanyahu also said, "We haven't had a problem with the Assad regime for 40 years. Not a single bullet was fired on the Golan Heights." The Golan Heights. Well, Israel captured the Golan Heights from Syria in 1967 and has held on to that part of Syria since then and has transferred 20,000 Israeli settlers onto that land. That land is wonderful. Farming land is rich. The soil is rich. The water is abundant. So farmers are prospering in the Golan. The Golan belongs to Israel. Golan belongs to Syria. But Israel, in 1981, annexed the Golan Heights. It said Golan belongs to Israel. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? Where is international law? No other country recognizes Israel's claim that it now owns the Golan Heights. No country in the world. 20,000 settlers there. And let me ask you this. Where do you think he made the speech that they don't have a problem with the Assad regime and that for 40 years, not a single... Where did he make this speech? He made it in Moscow just after he met Vladimir Putin. Putin is pals with Netanyahu. Putin is a pal of Iran. Israel hates Iran. America wanted Assad out. Now it's moving out of Syria. So Turkey will invade northern Syria and whack the Kurds. So Assad will then get control of all of Syria. And the Arab countries, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, they wanted Assad out because he was close to Iran. Now all of them are getting ready to open their embassies again in Syria, and Assad is now the good boy. Everything will be back to normal, hunky-dory. So all these countries involved in Syria will carry on business as usual, and Assad will carry on as usual. Hey, you know what? We forgot just one element, one party in Syria, and that is the people. The Syrian people, ordinary Syrians. In 8 years of their revolution, since the fighting started in 2011, what have they gained? Zero. Naught. Except death and destruction, running for their lives. Millions to Lebanon, to Jordan, to Turkey, to Europe, losing their lives trying to cross the Mediterranean. Hundreds of thousands killed. In the end, all for nothing. Just poverty and suffering, a humanitarian crisis. Blood and tears soak the ground. Sick, isn't it? Absolutely sick. Well, as I said, it's one big chamors, a colossal mess. Right. Let's cross the border from Syria into Israel. What's happening there? What's happening there? in Palestine. Well, what do you expect? You know, I always marvel at the fact that Israel can do anything that it wants to and get away with it. Anything. No consequences, no price to pay, nothing to be afraid of, no repercussion, no punishment for doing wrongs. And it has done many wrongs since it was created in 1948. It shows the two fingers to international law. Bombs surrounding countries, ignores UN resolutions. The big one, of course, Resolution 242, which was passed in 1968 by the United Nations, and it told Israel that it must get out of the West Bank, the Gaza and East Jerusalem, which it captured in the Six-Day War in 1967. And as I told you, in 1981, it annexed the Golan Heights, annexed it. International law? Resolutions of the United Nations? Israel not only told the United Nations FUTSAC, but also began systematically colonizing these places. That is the West Bank, the Gaza, and East Jerusalem, where Al-Aqsa is located, and also the Golan Heights. Today, there are about 650,000 Israelis living in huge housing estates, settlements, we call them, huge housing estates. And there are 196 settlements all over the West Bank and East Jerusalem. In effect, it has annexed these areas. And what about the harsh treatment of the Palestinian population that is under Israeli control? Well, you know about, I suppose you know all about that. And the world just shrugs and looks the other way. More than 250 killed and 18,000 injured at the Gaza protests by Israeli snipers. Ach, shame, eh? But Israel has to protect itself from these terrorists, ne? The kids whose legs were shot off, the medical people, all terrorists. You know the story. And every week, there's some new attack on the Palestinians. Even while they are in prison, can you believe it? 7,500 in prisons in Israel right now, 230 children, 54 females. What's the latest? Israel's public security minister, Gilad Erdan, has announced plans to worsen conditions for Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. Worsen. Did you hear that? Things are already horrible, but he wants to worsen it. Ration the water that they receive and cut down family visits and also cut down the number of showers they are allowed to take. Is there an outcry from the so-called civilized world at this outrage? Not even a whimper. Nothing. Nothing. And Mustafa Barghouti, head of the Palestinian National Initiative Party, told Al Jazeera that the Israeli government acts like it has a free hand to oppress Palestinians in any way they want. And he said this week in Ramallah, he said, the only way to force Israel to abstain from this behavior is to impose sanctions on Israel. Israel is behaving as if it is above international law, and this must change. Huh? And this must change? Who will change it? The United States? In the words of our former president, you know what? It's no secret that Israel captured the U.S. government a very long time ago, right from the time it was founded. If you have American politicians in your pocket, you are not answerable to anyone about your contravention of international law, or defy UN resolutions, or smash the Palestinians for that matter. The world can go and jump in the lake, and you must hand it to Israel Really, you must hand it to Israel. It uses huge sums of money and doesn't waste any time at all to get you as politicians into its pocket, onto its side. Here's a report from 2 days ago. 2 days ago. The Israeli lobby, APAC, American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, has been busy taking a wide variety of government officials and opinion makers on fully expense-paid trips to Israel this month. The trips cost in the range of $10,000 per person. Six newly elected House of Representative members are on a five-day visit to Israel. A delegation of Northern California, so-called progressive leaders, are on a week-long trip. Media commentator on CNN, Tara Setmeyer, has just returned from such a trip. And a delegation of Southern California progressive leaders returned from the trip earlier this month. The trips are organized and funded by the American Israeli Education Foundation, AIEF, the non-profit arm of the powerful Israeli lobby group APAC. AIEF was founded in 1989, it says, to advance the purposes of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. APAC is widely believed to be the most powerful organization in the U.S. lobbying Congress on behalf of a foreign country, Israel. An outgrowth of the 1939 organization, American Zionist Emergency Council, APAC's annual convention is attended by ambitious politicians from across the political spectrum. Did you get that? If you want to be president of the United States, you have to go to the annual convention, where I think there are about 6,000 or 10,000 delegates there in Washington, and you have to virtually bow down and say, I will do everything that Israel wants. Everything that Israel wants. All the presidents of the United States have attended that convention and says, we stand shoulder to shoulder with Israel. So, dear listeners, do you think that these politicians who went on a wonderful all-expenses educational trip to Israel, well, education means, you know what, the Israelis are the good guys and the Palestinians are terrorists. Do you think they will speak out against Israel? Do you think so? That will be as shocking as Jacob Zuma announcing that he's joining the DA. So the bottom line is this. The English expression says, he who pays the piper calls the tune. Meaning that these politicians will, to put it in Durban lingo, they will tune what Israel wants them to tune. Not a squeak from any of them about this week's attack on a school. This week's attack on a school. Let me just finish off very quickly. Israeli forces raided a Palestinian school in the West Bank city of Bethlehem on Wednesday. Israeli soldiers fired rubber bullets, tear gas, and stun grenades during the raid on the school in the town of Tohu in eastern Bethlehem. Several Palestinian students suffered temporary asphyxiation from the Israeli tear gas and were treated on the spot. Rubber bullets and stun grenades against children in a school. Imagine if Palestinians did that to an Israeli school. Sure, the sky will fall down. If it happened here in Orient, can you imagine that Orient school? But, you know what? All Palestinians are terrorists. Even little children. So Israel can do what it wants. What a crazy world we are living in, eh? Last word. The murder of Khashoggi. So Saudi Arabia announced that it is putting 11 men on trial and the prosecutor asked for the death penalty for 5 of them. It's going to be a quick and open and shut case. What is that English expression? Dead men tell no tales. Finish and klar. And I am Finish and Klar. Let me just read you the light at the end of the tunnel. So Ronnie from Mirbank, he just can't keep his mouth shut, especially when it comes to responding to his wife, Pushpa. Can't keep his mouth shut. And Gulambai went to visit him in ICU once again. His nose was broken and 3 ribs were fractured. Gulambai said, hey, Ronnie, what happened to you this time, eh? And what did Gulu, let me put it this way. I came home from Graf yesterday and my fro was all nervous and agitated. And she said, Ronnie, You know what happened? That the wall clock in the sitting room almost killed my mother. It fell on the sofa just a few seconds after she got up. Then I told Pushpa, yeah, that stupid clock was always slow, eh? This is A.B. Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum.